This is Alternate Take. I am your host, Danny Rodriguez. Welcome back to the show. On this episode, we hit the streets. That sounds a lot cooler than what what it was actually about. We did hit the streets, but in a different sense. We talked to Mr. Jared Klickstein. Now, I'm going to say this off the bat, man. There's very few people I respect and admire as much as a person like Jared Klickstein. The dude is an author. His book will be out in 2024. It's going to be called Crooked Smile. And essentially, the book's about his life and how he rose from the ashes, man. And how he got a moment of clarity, an epiphany to not live the way he was living anymore. But also how, you know, policies, drug-related policies in California incentivized him to kind of essentially live the way he was living. Very, very articulate guy, man. Very smart. Very humble. But for those of you guys who don't know, Jared Klickstein was a homeless drug addict living in Skid Row. And Skid Row is a shithole. So for him to get out of that, it's just unbelievable, man. I don't know how, you know, that happened, man. Like, I don't know if you're religious, then, you know, God hit him with that thunderbolt. If you're, I don't know, man. I don't know what happened, but the dude is a legend, man. And he got to talk to us about, you know, his time out there, his multiple stints in rehab and jail, and how he decided to not live that way anymore, man. He's a very honorable man. And I heard about him through the great Michael Schellenberger. He's one of our favorite authors. I've seen him on Jesse Waters a few times. He was just on Eddie Bravo's podcast. So the dude's a hell of a guy, man. If you're looking to subscribe to his stuff, I put his Substack below in the podcast description, his Instagram, Twitter, all that stuff. So go check him out. But thanks a lot for joining the show, Jared. I appreciate it, brother. Glad to call you a friend. So without further ado, I bring to you guys the great wisdom of Jared Klickstein. Alternate Take, what is up, you guys, man? We are back again with another episode, man. We brought you the awesome Jared Klickstein. How you doing, brother?
Hey, I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Of course, man. I came across your stuff from the great Michael Schellenberger, man. I read his book, a couple of them now, and I saw that he recently did a shout out to you on Instagram, and I was like, if it's Schellenberger approves this shit, I gotta see what the deal is, man. The dude's crazy intelligent, super smart, and his books are fascinating. And I came across your work, man, and I was genuinely stunned, man, like absolutely stunned, because it's stories you don't hear about often. And the ones that you do hear about, they aren't celebrated as much as they should be. That's another thing I realized. But let's get started from there, man. Let's talk about the beginning of your story, man. I want to hear all about it.
Yeah, sure. Well, yeah, obviously I reached out to Schellenberger at some point and we got linked up, and that's just because I noticed that we sort of had some of the same beliefs, but the difference between me and Schellenberger was that I actually was a homeless drug addict. So naturally I reached out to him. But just to give like a quick overview, you know, my parents were heroin addicts, and I grew up in a, you know, a drug house basically, and you know, did what I could and sort of went through some trauma and all that, but it came out okay and ended up going to college. And in college I discovered drugs. You know, drugs were around and people were doing heroin, and you know, I held off for a while, but eventually I tried heroin, and you know, pretty quickly, within about 2 years, I was like strung out and homeless on the streets. And I ended up getting an opportunity in Santa Cruz, where I went to college, to work for I would call it the cartel. I mean, like the cartel, like a subsidiary of the cartel, just like a local drug running operation. And there they required me to use methamphetamine when I worked for them, so I wouldn't fall asleep when I was driving, because they knew I was a heroin addict. So I got introduced to methamphetamine, and I'd say within 2 months I was homeless, like on the streets, and just completely lost my mind. And you know, had some family in Los Angeles, so I went down to Los Angeles. They gave me one shot. I had health insurance. They said, we'll take you to, you know, we'll let you go to rehab, we'll get you into a rehab. Got kicked out pretty quick, got high the whole time. And with nowhere to go, I was in Los Angeles, not a place where I was from. People told me to go to Skid Row. And just a few months after being a college kid, I was on Skid Row. Wow. And that was 2011. Yeah. That's
unbelievable, man. And when you first started using, what was going through your mind, man, in the sense of like, was it just reactionary, kind of like the way like we eat food, like, well, here's chips, I'm just going to eat them, and you don't think about it till later? Or was it in your mind like, fuck, I'm about to do this, and my parents did this, and like, fuck, I don't know what was your thought process when you first started using?
Yeah, well, I sort of skimmed over it, but what really happened was people were doing heroin and doing acid, and you know, they were doing drugs in my college, and I actually was like one of the last people to try it. I knew that my parents were heroin addicts. I stayed away from it, but what I didn't know was, you know, OxyContin was going around. I didn't know what OxyContin was. I didn't know that it was closely related to heroin. So I sort of started doing that first, and got very addicted to that very quickly. And I just didn't know. I just thought it was a pill. You know, I thought it was safe because it was a pill. But, you know, I did some research. People told me, hey, that's basically heroin. You might as well just get on heroin, you know? So, and of course I thought, well, my parents are heroin addicts, but I realized that I was already deeply addicted to OxyContin. And so I sort of got tricked into it, you know, through getting on the pills. But heroin is cheaper and stronger. So it was a natural, the evolution that I, you know, graduated to heroin. And by then I was just like, man, I know where this is going. I saw it happen to my parents. I sort of knew very quickly this is going to end with me being a complete junkie. And that's where it went.
Damn. You know, there's so many people like that suffer in families like that, man, that fucking like I have family members where maybe you get like a surgery or something and they give you all these pills and then quickly, man, you're addicted. And they are basically heroin. Like, you know, I'm not a doctor, but they're very similar, if not almost the same, just with fancier names. And yeah, you run out of your subscription, you can't get more, or prescription, sorry, and go for cheaper alternatives, man. And it's really crazy how many families have been ruined over that shit, man. It's fucking absolutely nuts. And you know, when I think about like heroin, I don't know if you've ever seen like the movie of Blood In, Blood Out.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Like when the little brother dies,
yeah,
in the tub, you know, like, and it's like, I always thought about that scene. Like, I was I'm a Mexican dude. Like, we fucking seen that movie, American Me. This is the fucking, yeah, everyone's seen, dude. Like, and I remember seeing that and I didn't know what it was. I just remember like, I was little and I was like, I just remember like fucking, I think they're playing a Little Wing in the back from like Jimi Hendrix, and like in my head I'm like, that's the heroin song, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't know,
yeah,
what exactly was happening. But man, it's crazy how much of a grip that stuff has, man. It really, it's not like other shit. It's not like shrooms where you can use it for benefits. It's just fucking bad. It's not one good thing about it, man, at least that I don't know of. I mean, but when you're on Skid Row, man, you know, what was your day like? Like what were you doing? What was Jared Klickstein doing on a normal day on Skid Row?
Well, I was very fortunate. I wound up like clicking up with some Mexican guys. And because, you know, I am white and there's not a lot of white guys down there. And but, you know, the Mexican guys were pretty clicked up and I sort of noticed that. And it took a while to gain their respect, but I kind of proved to them that I could be useful. You know, I can steal things. I can go into the store and people don't follow me around and I can shoplift and I was like making money. I was stealing a lot. I was a thief and I would buy my drugs from them and they kind of grew to like me, I guess. And then eventually it was like, hey, can I set up my tent over by you guys? And, you know, one thing led to another. And it's like, I was just kind of part of this little clique after, you know, a month or so. You know, I'd come with like clean socks and like just, you know, candy that I stole or what, anything useful. And so that was pretty much my day. But there are no days really when back then, because I was using meth pretty heavily and I was staying up for 3 days at a time. And then I'd sleep for about 24 hours. So I would be up for 3 days, just kind of, you know, I had a bicycle I was riding around during the day. It was like shoplifting or going down to Union Station and begging for change or trying to tell people these stories like, hey, I'm just trying to get home for Thanksgiving or Christmas or whatever, and people give me money. And then just do heroin and meth all day. And by nighttime, it was like, you know, the mischief started, and I would, you know, try to break in. I would, you know, take the bus to like a residential neighborhood, try to break into garages or just kind of walk around, go through garbage cans, and just never like broke into a house, but like just up until that point, you know, going into backyards, trying to steal bicycles. And I, you know, I'm not proud of this behavior. I was like, I was one of these guys that we see all these guys, you know, at nighttime. Yeah. They're walking around your neighborhood. They're trying to go through your, you know, you might catch them on your deck or something like that, trying to grab something. I was just one of those guys, and I'd do that 3 days on, one day off.
Wow. That's so crazy, man. When you're in this stage, I imagine it's like a fucking, it's a wild stage where you don't really consider anyone else's like feelings or, you don't care about really anything else but yourself and your next fix. You know what I mean? Like when did it start to hit you where, holy shit, I'm starting to care now about what I'm doing. I'm starting to wake up a little bit. Like when, or I don't want to do this anymore. Like when did that switch happen for you?
Well, unfortunately it took many years. You know that you're doing bad things, but you think the world owes you something because you had a bad childhood, or listen, I slept outside on the concrete. When you sleep on concrete, you wake up thinking the world owes me something. You know, these people that didn't sleep on concrete all night, I'm going to take stuff from them, and you justify it, and you just justify it for years. And, you know, I was on Skid Row that time for like 8 months or something. And then I went back to Oakland and stayed with a friend, and continued to get high. And it just, you know, he eventually kicked me out after a while, and it just goes on for like 8 years of this kind of like couch surfing / wait until I get kicked out. Now I'm homeless again. And, I realized, like, you know, basically everyone that ever cared about me, it's not that they didn't care about me anymore, but they just had to kind of write me off like I didn't exist, because they did care about me, but they just couldn't let me abuse them anymore and let me use them anymore and watch me just, you know, wither into something despicable. And honestly, like, I was on the verge of death for so long that I think people were just like, I don't even want to be around. I don't want to get too close to you. I want to kind of disconnect, because you're just going to die. And I don't know. For me, it was really, I had to wake up into some crazy scenarios where I was, experienced intense like health issues and physical issues, and just realized, like, you know, this is wild what I do to myself, you know. And I don't know, I got saved, I guess. I just, you know, I wound up at this rehab in 2018, and just after, you know, going in and out of jail and rehabs and all that, and something just happened where I woke up and was like, man, you know what, I play a big role in all the shitty things I've done, and, you know, I don't deserve to be treated differently, and I don't deserve to get to act like an asshole. And actually, all my problems that I've blamed on everybody else forever, if you look at the track record, I'm pretty much to blame for everything, for where I'm at right now. And that was just the moment of clarity that I had.
Wow, man. It's like extremely emotional for me to hear you say shit like that, man. It is, because, you know, I know people like that, and they're not that epiphany that you're at, the one that you got where you go, wow, like, people care about me. And the reason that they're letting me go is not because, it's not because they don't love me anymore. It's because they can't bear to watch it anymore. That's like a crazy, crazy fucking observation to get from someone in your position. That's like something on the opposite side. They get that and they realize that, and they hope that you understand that. But like, the chances are very low. The chances are the person in that situation, whoever's using, is just like, oh, you left me, or you're just like everybody else. You know, none of you have ever cared about me. It's just, you're all fake this whole time. Whatever excuse they can figure out, it's always something that your addiction's feeding.
But yeah,
that's a very powerful observation and a crazy epiphany to get, man. That's like, you know, clarity in the face of just so much fucking chaos, man. That's really what it is. It's like, it's hard to get clarity. Like, I picture it, like, if there's an analogy, it's like you're You ever see a scene like in a war movie where it's like the battle's going on and then they go in slow motion and the guy kind of like the bullets are going shoom, shoom. That's like the moment you got where like you know where the fucking king's at. He's back there. All right, cool. Now this is the person I got to take out first and I got to take out that person. But everything's slow-mo now, as to where before it was just fucking bullets and drama and crazy shit. But now you can finally go, oh, I'm in war, but I can do this.
And yeah.
Shit, you know, there's the fucking target right over there. You know?
Yeah.
Wow, man, that's incredible. How many times would you say that you were in and out of jail?
I've been in and out of jail probably, I've probably been arrested 10 to 12 times, most of which, you know, I'm not some like badass or anything, but most of the time they let you out in 5 days or something like that. Eventually I did end up going for almost 6 months in 2015 to 2016. So I did almost 6 months in LA County Jail, and that was actually a blessing. I was on Skid Row for about a year prior to that, and it got really bad, just nasty. I was on death's door, and consider myself lucky that I got arrested, and they actually held on to me for, you know, months, and because I got to completely kick heroin, and I actually never got strung out on heroin ever again since then. I had relapsed and used heroin for like a couple of days and destroyed my life just in a couple of days, but I never actually got physically addicted to heroin ever again. So, you know, I credit jail with that. Jail separated me from heroin physically. It just didn't separate me from it mentally, really. So the mental addiction was still there. But you know, I had a good time, and it was better than sleeping outside. I mean, that's how bad it got on Skid Row, where it was like jail was safe, very safe in comparison. You know,
that's actually what I was going to ask. I was going to ask, were there any positives you took like from jail? Were there any things that surprised you about jail? I think any normal person, you tell them you're going to jail, like they just think the worst. Holy shit, don't drop the soap. Oh, fuck. Oh, shit. You know, I'm going to get shanked. Everyone just thinks like the worst thing. But like, what were the positives that you took away from it? You know, besides, or were the things that just surprised you about how jail actually was?
Well, jail is a nightmare for someone that like lives in a house or has a good life. Like, yeah, it's terrible. But when I was so lucky that my life was so bad that jail was like one step up from where I was at. So I was actually able to take some positive things out of it. One thing that I took, you know, listen, it's LA County Jail it's known as like the worst jail in America. I don't think that's true. It's definitely the most gang, like racially gang run jail in America. But it's actually pretty organized. And when I got in there, I was like a homeless person. I mean, I was like covered in sores and my hair was long and I was dirty, and I had, you know, they'd give you a peanut butter sandwich. I'd drip peanut butter all over myself. I didn't care. And you can't do that. You know, the gangs are like on top of you and they're like, you got to be clean. You got to like, you know, you got to like fold your clothes and shower every day. And if you don't, like, there's incredibly, incredibly bad consequences. Like, you get the shit kicked out of you. So, it like taught me how to be disciplined. It taught me how to like, hey, you got to care about the way your shoes look. Like, I never cared about the way my shoes look, but people in there like wash their shoes with a toothbrush. And, you know, just, I never even thought about that. And you just had to, this sounds like terrible. I mean, I'm not advocating that we send everyone to jail or anything, but like it taught me about discipline and it taught me about humility and kind of like listening to, you know, someone was kind of in charge of me. I had to listen to the people that were in my dorm that were old timers and all that. And I had to get my shit together and I had to exercise every day. And it was nasty. You know, there's like racial stuff going on there. That's not cool. But What I did find very nice was like, there's all this like racial politics going on in jail, but if you get anyone alone, they're like, yeah, all that shit's bullshit. Like, no one cares about that, you know, which was kind of funny and kind of cool. And, you know, cause you're in there with like Nazis and like, you know, Southsiders and all that. And at the end of the day, like, I don't know, you're all human and you're in the same room for months and it's like, you got to get along. And I'm not advocating for, you know, listen, that was the nastiest part of the jail stuff, was like the race stuff. But it did bring me some hope that like behind closed doors when no one was looking, no one really gave a shit about that. Most people didn't really give a shit about that. And we're just trying to have a good time, you know?
Right. Yeah. That's fucking interesting, man. When, for the listeners, I don't know, you're writing a book, you know, kind of, a, you know, detailing all your experiences about all this stuff. Were you already writing? And then did you have any ideas then at that time during in jail? I mean, I'm sure you had a lot of downtime. Were you keeping journals? Was there already a thought process? Maybe at some point, or were you still like, no, I gotta get my shit together. And who knows, I let the chips fall where they may type of thing.
I definitely wrote in jail. I definitely journaled, and things that just happened to me over the course of the years of being homeless and being on drugs, where I knew, like, one day if I can really get my shit together, like, I got to write a book, because I got a few good stories, and a few good stories turned into a handful of good stories. And eventually I had a lot of good stories, but also like a good arc of a story. Like, you know, it's a unique story. And in jail, some things happened to me where it was like, this has to go into a book. I mean, I'm Jewish by birth. And obviously there's like Nazis and white power guys in jail. And eventually I came clean and I told them, and they, you know, I thought they were going to like kill me, but they were like, no, you're fine. You know? And some crazy shit happened. I mean, I got the kosher meal in jail, which is worth a lot of money. And you know, I was like, they gave me like a yarmulke, like a Jewish hat. And like, I became friends with like a Nazi guy, and he would wear the hat when he would gamble, because he thought like his like racism against Jews actually was like, he thought Jews were like magical, and was like, if I wear your hat, I might win with the gambling. And then the Southsider rep, like the OG guy, was, he would wear my yarmulke when he'd gamble. And it was like this unbelievable thing.
Like a TV show.
Yeah. And I'm not like advocating their racism or whatever, but they were nice to me. And it was just like a hysterical moment. And when the moment happened, when we were playing dice and like the Nazi guy was wearing the yarmulke, who since then I've actually talked to him, and I think I've changed some people's minds. You know, there were some Nazi guys in there that when they met me and they found out that I was Jewish, they were like, well, if you're Jewish and you don't like own a bank or whatever, you're just a junkie guy like us, and you do carpentry when you're out, you know, like, maybe you can't judge an entire group of people based on like a stereotype. You know, I don't know. I think I've changed some minds, you know, not every mind that I encountered, but when shit like that happened, I was like, damn, I got to write a book. And I did, you know, like, I don't know, around like 2018, when I got sober, I started writing this book, and it took me years, and I was doing construction every day. And when I'd get home from work, I'd, you know, write a little bit here and there, and one thing led to another. And I did finish it up in about 2021, 2022, and tried to get a publishing deal for about a year, and finally got one a couple months ago. So the book will be coming out in 2024, and I'm excited about it.
It's unbelievable, man. It's super exciting, dude. You ever see the movie, Bad Boys? Not the one, not the Will Smith, Martin Lawrence, but the old school one, the one with Sean Penn?
No. I'm thinking of Colors.
Oh, dog, you got to watch this. It's fucking, it's beautiful. It's okay. So it's Sean Penn, and he's like a teenager, and it's S.I. Morales, but it's about, basically, long story short, they go to juvie.
Yeah.
And there's this little Jewish kid that's Sean Penn's cellmate, and he's such a dick. He's so fucking funny, dude. He's like, he's just a smart ass all the time, but he's like the smallest, skinniest one there, but he's also like the smartest one. So like, you know, they're always like, his name's Horowitz. And I'm like, Horowitz, like, you little motherfucker. And they're like, but he knows how to fix radio. So they're like, fix my fucking radio. And he's like, get the fuck out of here. You know, say whatever he wants, because he's the fix it guy, you know?
Yeah.
But
yeah, you find your value in there, and like, then people respect you. And like, I'm not the biggest guy or anything, or the toughest guy, but like, you know, people liked talking to me, and I was nice, and I was Jewish. So they were like, can you help me with my like case? You know, they thought I was like a lawyer.
I'm going pro per. I need your help.
And, you know, obviously I'm not a lawyer, and I was literally a crackhead. Like, but they, you know, I don't know. I tried to help people. They thought I like had some knowledge or something of law. And, you know, no one really fucked with me about that. And that was cool. You know, I can't speak for every person that's been to jail, and the horrible things happen in jail.
Yeah.
You know, but, one thing I did see in jail was like, oh, if I keep fucking around, like, I'm going to become these guys that like basically live in jail. Like they go for 12 months, they get out for two, they go in for 12 months. And I saw like myself in 10 years. And I was like, I don't want to become that. I don't want to be that, you know?
Right.
Jail kind of woke me up to that. I was like, damn, I got, this is my first time really going to jail and I don't have to ever go back. And I haven't been back since then. So I guess it worked.
Yeah. I want to ask, like, what were your thoughts on, or what are your thoughts on specifically, like, how do you think it's incentivized to be doing these things like heroin and meth and for people to go to, like, to go to jail all the time? I know people that work in jails, their experience is that, like, it's too cushiony. They, at least from what they tell me, they might be biased, but that's what they tell me, that, that they think it's too good for people to go in there, that, like, it's not enough punishment. Do you think in general, like, not, I don't mean punishment, like physical or anything like that, but I mean, like, do you think that, like, in general in society, that we maybe incentivize the use of drugs maybe a little bit too much, like really fucked up ones?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, in my book, I talk about, like, you know, critique of policy and all that. And things have changed since I stopped doing drugs. But yeah, I think right now, like, this, it's, I don't want to say like it's soft, but like there is no incentivization to stop using drugs. There's no incentivization to stop shoplifting or committing, you know, theft. And you can kind of just be homeless and get high with no real consequences from society at this point. And I'm not saying these people deserve to be locked up, but without any consequences, it's, you know, consequences is what got me to get off drugs, in my opinion, and what got me to kind of change my thinking. And right now they're just kind of running wild in certain places. And I don't think it's just doing so much detrimental damage to, like, society as a whole. And it's not really fair to the drug addicts and the homeless people themselves, because those are people, you know, those are people with potential, and they're just kind of being allowed to rot away in our streets. And I don't think we should necessarily arrest them, but I think a solution is mandated treatment for, like, homeless drug addicts that are committing a crime. If you want to do drugs in your house and go to work every day, I don't think you should ever be arrested. You're just doing your thing. But if your drug use is affecting society, which we're seeing in some of these cities, you should be mandated to treatment. And I know people say, okay, mandated treatment doesn't work that often, or that there's not, but it's like, okay, well, do you have a better, is the other option just letting people die in the streets? Like, I don't, or is the other option, there's literally three options. It's like, let people rot away in the streets and kill themselves, send them to prison, or mandate them to treatment. I mean, there's really, I can't think of, like, a fourth option. The fourth option would be to just provide them free housing where they can just die in a studio apartment.
Right.
Those are really the four options. And of those four options, I think the best option is mandated treatment. And we're talking about comprehensive mandated treatment. We're talking about, like, job training, cognitive behavioral therapy, like intensive. And it's going to cost a lot of money, but it's like, we're just throwing money away right now and not doing anything. So I don't see why it isn't possible to, we got to open up detox centers. Fentanyl is incredibly hard to get off of. It's much harder than heroin in terms of a physical addiction. I mean, heroin is incredibly hard to kick. Fentanyl is even harder. We should be, like, popping up detox centers all over Los Angeles County and San Francisco and all that. Yeah, because kind of just, like, letting people get high in the street and shoplift and stuff is, like, it's not good for anybody.
Yeah,
especially one.
Absolutely. I think when it comes to matters is like this too, like, I see how the media handles it, and I realize how powerful the use of labels are. You see how the left does it a lot with, like, I don't want to make it political, but just an example, when it comes to, like, say, transgenderism, they call it gender affirming care, and then the right will call it, you know, child mutilation. And I think, yeah, like, when it comes to, like, homeless matters, when it comes to, like, let's say, mandated treatment, like, if it was changed to maybe just to appease everybody, like, you know, homeless affirming care, something like the way they do gender affirm, maybe that would somehow, because that's the problem, right? Is that, like, it's the smart people that know, that have at least are willing to try solutions, and the majority of the rest, or at least the rest of the people that just don't want to be involved, they just want to be appeased for these couple minutes. They just want to hear the nice things in their head from the TV, from the politicians, and then not think about it and pretend like it's going away when it's really not.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that's just the world we live in, where people, labels like that matter. It's ridiculous. I don't know why, but they do. But I agree with you, man. I do think that is something that should happen, man. I don't know any other solution that would be better. I mean, you look at LA, man. LA is, you know, I'm in the surrounding area of LA. It's extremely fucked up, man. Like, it, you're talking about, like, first of all, it's considered property. Like, when you're homeless and you have your stuff, it's considered property. So there's no more LAPD going around taking them away and then basically reassigning them somewhere else. Like, here's a tent, live over there by the bridge. There's none of that. It's just stay here on the middle of Cesar Chavez with fucking hundreds of cars passing by. And, you know, when you get strung out and you walk into the road because you don't know what the fuck you're doing, you're just going to hit, and then it's just going to be an accident. And it's really bad, man. It's really fucked up. And, you know, people are fucking done with it, man. I know, like, people are done with it in the sense that, like, dude, California has had, what, 3 years in a row or 2 or 3 years in a row where they've lost people of California. They're actually taxing people now for leaving California. It's like actually the fucking song now. It's Hotel California, all, you know, for real.
I left about a year and a half ago.
Yeah. And I don't blame anyone for leaving, man. Like, the only people that are staying really are the people that have, like, you know, fixed place jobs. Like, my job is here. I can't, like, transfer to another place. You know, this is where I work.
Yeah.
Or people that are just, like, so hell bent on the weather, you know, or really rich people that can just afford, you know, this area, man. It's really fucked up, dude. It's really fucked up. And, you know, I don't see any solutions that we're trying, you know, obviously, at least from California. Have there been any solutions that you've seen people try at all, like in other states, or is it kind of universal, like at least in California, I mean, in the United States, that everywhere is just kind of failing and no one's really making any progress in any states or anywhere?
Well, you know, San Francisco opened up a supervised consumption site for people to, like, go and use fentanyl supervised. And, you know, 50,000 people utilized this consumption site in the span of the 11 months that it was open, and they reversed 300 overdoses. So they saved 300 lives. But it's estimated 50 to 100,000 people, like, used this place, and or instances of people using this place, not individuals. And only 38 people were connected to, like, to treatment, you know. So it's like, that's half the thing. It's like, okay, let's kind of, yes, I think we should pass out Narcan. Like, we don't want people dying. You know, we should maybe even talk about, like, a safe supply of, like, hey, if you're strung out on fentanyl, we have safe fentanyl right here. But we have to heavily incentivize those people to get treatment and detox. And if they're committing crimes, to get the money to buy drugs, we need to, like, arrest them and not send them to jail, but mandate them to treatment as opposed to jail. One place I think that's doing it pretty good is Portugal. Everyone always cites Portugal, but Portugal is very misunderstood. Yes, they've decriminalized drugs, but you can't just sell drugs in the street. You can't use drugs in the street. You can't publicly be intoxicated. If you are arrested. People forget that part, you know. But yes, drugs are decriminalized. But if you get caught for doing any of these things, you have to be set upon a panel of a doctor, a psychologist, and a police officer. They sort of interview you and heavily incentivize you to get treatment, especially if you have a job like taxi driver or doctor. And if you do have a job that requires a license, they'll take that license away from you, you know, unless you agree to go to this treatment. So they really incentivize people to go to treatment and get off drugs. And here we're not doing that part. We're just doing the part where it's like, hey, we're not criminalizing homelessness anymore. We're not criminalizing shoplifting anymore. You can just get high in the street with no consequences. You can move on to the subway if you want and yell at people and nothing will happen. You know, it's like, we can't do that. And on the other hand, it's, you know, we can't just, like, put everyone in prison. I mean, that's not only inhumane, it's also, it's incredibly expensive and inhumane to do that. I mean, that doesn't really work either. So, yeah, we got to change what we're doing, you know, and people use language. You're right about language. You know, it's like the gender affirming care versus child mutilation. Those are both incredibly strong terms. Like, both the left and the right utilize language to kind of win the argument just with the words, you know. And it's like, people do that with homelessness. It's like, hey, they're not called homeless anymore. They're called unhoused. And it's like, that doesn't solve anything. That just,
who's a fuck?
Only for you to feel better about yourself for 3 seconds when you say, there's an unhoused neighbor taking a shit in my backyard. I mean, that doesn't change anything.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know. Yeah. I know here in California, they, you know, they give out basically everything but the drug. I mean, you can go to clinics, you can get the pipe, you can get the Narcan. And I think even giving Narcan now is not probably a good idea just because, again, it incentivizes you to just keep doing it. Like, oh, well, I have a safety fall now. I mean, like, don't get me wrong, it's going to save someone's life and that's great. But I mean, you can't administer your Narcan yourself. Like, you're giving it to your buddy. So when you pass out, you know, he does it for you. So it's just a, you know, it's tricky. It's tricky because obviously I don't want them to die. But obviously, if it's just incentivizing you to keep doing it, then, like, you know, that's not going to work either. And you're right. Mandated is the key word, man, because I think people would be genuinely shocked, like, if they actually went to these places and how many people would not take their help, you know, to get out of them, like to go to clinics where they have drug testing and they have curfews and shit. And how many people would go, fuck you, like, I'm not going. Like, and I think they'd be really surprised because, like, I think the majority of people, I wouldn't say the majority, but the misinformed people, people naive to this issue, the people that are very ignorant to this issue, they just think what the TV tells them, which is like, look at these poor people who are so down on their luck. Let's go help them. And it's like, yeah, that's just one part of the story, though. Like, a lot of them are, you know, it's self-inflicted wounds, and they're not looking to fix those wounds anytime soon unless we force them to fix these wounds. Like, we have to help them. If you really do consider them people of society that are worth saving, then that means you have some sort of moral, ethical duty to try to help them. And you're not going to help them by fucking making yourself feel better by saying these words or giving more money to politicians that do fucking nothing. Like, there's got to be a plan. There's got to be something to do. You know, sometimes, like, dude, like, sometimes you got to just do things that people don't like to get things fixed, man. My dad used to say that when we were kids, because, like, you know, not to throw my brother on the bus, he's doing just fine in life. But, like, when we were kids, it was like, he'd always say, like, your brother's like a big fucking rock. Like, I push him up the hill, and as soon as I let go, he just fucking rolls back down. Like, he's just, you know, that was always like his thing. He's like, and it's fucking like, I understand that's like society for us. Like, we're pushing this rock up, but every time we let go, it just falls back down. And like, right now, everyone's just giving up. We let the rock go down to the bottom of the fucking hill, and no one's willing to even come up with ideas on how to push it back up at all, man. And it's tough, man. But I'll tell you what, man, it's people like you that are going to be a face to this thing, man. Absolutely. Like, it's just like any of those issues, dude, like the fucking trans issues, racial issues, whenever a person who's in it speaks on it, it's like more validation.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, this guy can't talk about boxing because you're not a boxer. And you're like, okay, whatever. But when the boxer says, no, that guy's right, I'm a boxer, trust me, then you're like, okay, maybe we should listen to everybody. Like, maybe we shouldn't be so judgy on who says what. But the validation does come. It is important, you know. And you having your backstory and being so damn honest about it, man. Like I said, man, it's very powerful. Like, I don't know if you're going to be giving speeches or anything like that, but you should.
Thank you. If people want me to. I mean, listen, I'm not an expert on anything. But the one thing I do have a lot of experience in is being a homeless drug addict, you know, transient person. And I was able to get out of that. And I don't think I'm better than anybody, but I did do it. So it's like, you know, yeah, my ideas hold weight, you know, and I think people respect that. And I'm not trying to get anything out of it. I'm just trying to, you know, I was raised in California. I just want to, you know, help people get off drugs, you know, and listen, you got to want to get off drugs.
Right.
But I was kind of forced into a position to want to get off drugs. I mean, sometimes you got to be, you know, convinced to want to get off drugs. You know, listen, I do think Narcan should be everywhere, but I think if medics come and Narcan you, they don't just let you go. It's like, no, we just Narcan you. Like, you're going to detox. Like, you know, because you're just going to go back out there and just keep getting high. So it's like, there's got to be some kind of, it's like, hey, we're helping you guys. We don't want you to die, but you can't just be fucking around,
right?
You know, till the end of time. You know, you fuck up, we're not going to punish you. Detox is not a punishment. You know, we're going to get you in here. We're going to get you off drugs. You're going to have a clear state of mind, and you might decide, hey, you know what? It's time for me to go to rehab. We're going to offer you that. And you know, in some cases, if you break the law, maybe we'll mandate you to treatment. But you know, we just have to like have these miracle factories where we just turn street people. You know, I was a street person. I was a crazy person that would scream on the train and yell at people and, you know, try to grab people's pocketbooks and run away. And now I'm a, you know, I'm not the greatest person on the planet, but you know, I'm a net positive now. So it's like a lot of these people have potential to be net positives. And it's not fair that we're just kind of ignoring them, really just ignoring them at the cost of our own sanity and our own cities. And it's, and really at the end of the day, their lives, because they're just going to die, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, man. No, I really do believe that. And you should be doing speeches, man, because the best people, I just talked about this on the podcast yesterday. The people that are the most talented, the people that are most successful, they tend to all use traumas in their life, whatever it may be. It could be something as small as car crash. It could be something as serious as, you know, being in Skid Row for a couple of years. It could be anything, man. Death of a loved one. They use that eventually to their benefit. Maybe not initially, but eventually over time, they use their experience in that to fuel them to get better at life in some way, you know? And I've realized that with everybody, and the ones that don't, you know, they'll be left behind. But there's not many people that have your niche that are, you know, like I said, that are living, that used to live on Skid Row, you know, had the epiphany, got out of it, went to jail multiple times, journaled, kept his journals, wrote books, became friends with people, got his life together, man. That's a past trauma that you're choosing to use for your benefit, that you're choosing to use to somehow benefit other people too as well. I absolutely think you should be doing speeches, man. You know, I think you'd be a great person to talk to schools. I think you'd be a great person to talk to a lot of fucking people, man. Politicians need to hear people from the ground up, man. They only hear what other politician buddies say straight up, and it's just the same regurgitated message over and over that no one gives a fuck about. It's ridiculous. You know, like they just want to watch the movie with Will Smith where he cries in the restroom and fucking feel good. That's fucking it. They don't want to do shit else, you know? And hey, congratulations. Yeah.
Exactly. I'm trying to talk to them. I think some of them might start talking to me, maybe. I mean, it's like, you know, it's clearly failing whatever's happening. It's like, let's talk to a guy that went through it. And I do agree totally. Listen, I've always said utilize your trauma. You know, trauma is worth something. I wouldn't trade anything. I mean, I've nothing that I went through. I would, if I could go back in time, I would change, because all that shit led to where I'm at right now, and I'm happy with where I'm at right now. And I believe that it is such value. It is such value what I went through. You know, just the childhood with the drug addict parents, and then eventually ending up homeless myself and on drugs. I wouldn't trade it for anything. I mean, it really, that's how valuable this transformation has been, is, and just my ability to view things differently since getting off drugs. It's just like, you got to utilize that trauma to do good and to build and to grow and to set goals in your life. And it's working. That's all I can say, really. It's working.
Wow, man. You're an inspiration, brother, man. I really do.
Thank you very much.
I really do believe that, man. I'm happy to call you my friend, man. Do me a favor, dude. Please tell everyone where they can keep up with you, man. Like, what's updates on the book, you know, release dates. If there's websites they can, I don't know if you're writing like, you know, blogs or journals or anything like that, man. What's all the information for Jared Klickstein?
Well, yeah, the best way is just Twitter. I'm at Metagrift. That's Metagrift at Metagrift. On Twitter, you can kind of find all the updates on the book. The book will be coming out before spring of 2024. The book will be called Crooked Smile. I also write for Substack. I have a Substack. Just search Jared Klickstein Substack. There's also a link to that in my Twitter. And that's how you can kind of keep up. I'll be letting everyone know on Twitter, like as the book starts, you know, coming together. I mean, the book is written. I just have to go through the process with the publishing company and all that. But should be out in like, you know, 6 to 9 months.
Exciting, man. I got to get a signed copy from you, man.
Of course. Absolutely.
All right. Man,
thank you so much.
Thanks again, man, for coming on the show, dude. I really appreciate you.
Of course. I appreciate you too. Thank you.
This has been Alternate Take. We'll see you guys later. Peace. And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, our interview with Jared Klickstein. How was that not great, man? Wow. You know, I just re-listened to the interview myself and very, very inspired, man. What a guy, dude. Like I said, I put all the links to Jared's stuff in the podcast description, so you can go check that stuff out. His Substack, where he keeps up to date with anything regarding his book, which is going to be called Crooked Smile, out in 2024. And his rest of his stuff, you know, his Twitter and his Instagram, that's it. It's all there too. So Thank you again, Jared, for joining the show and enlightening us, man. I was honored to do it. For anyone else looking to join Alternate Take, man, check out our Instagram, man, at Alternate Take Podcast, and same with YouTube. You know, it's any new fan I get is well cherished, man. Honestly, you know, this is a very grassroots type of thing, and I appreciate everybody who's looking to support, man, looking to support the little guy and help us grow. It means a lot to me. Anyways, this has been Alternate Take. My name is Danny Rodriguez. I'll see you guys later. Peace.